Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Jensen Brooks on the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show. Thank everybody for listening today. Again, my name is Jensen Brooks, and this is the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show that you're listening to. Today is Saturday, May 7th, 2022, and we have a beautiful day here in Northern California. I hope it's equally as beautiful where you are. A little bit about the Council of Elders concept. It's about elders in the community reaching out to younger people, sharing with them insights, helping them to navigate through life, and helping them to avoid some of the pitfalls that elders had gone through their life, as well as listening to younger people to just find out their point of view. Young people are very smart these days, and they have a lot to share with elders also. So a little bit about the concept. Today the show is going to be a little bit different. I had a guest lined up, love guest, but she had a speaking engagement right at the last minute that she had to do. And I'll have her on in the next couple of weeks. But in the meantime, what I'd like to do today is talk about communications. And I've been reading a book. It's called Exactly What to Say, The Magic Words for Influence and Impact, M. Jones. It's a small book. Really, you can read it. You can read it in one day if you really wanted to, because it's 100 and some pages, and it's not like full pages. A lot of the words are very large. But what he's talking about is that everybody is an influencer. Whether you like it or not, you are an influencer. And what you say can have influence or it could not. There's a passage of scripture in the Proverbs 25 and 11. It says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. So, you know, even the ancient people talked about how you can use words to be more effective in your communications. And this book I'm reading, it's got like 23 things that you can use in your life to help you be more effective. It helps you be able to really be more persuasive, you might say, or just be more effective in getting people to do what you want as long as it's right. Some of the things that people say on the back of this book, it says, Phil Jones' insights demonstrate how to influence others with integrity while never seeming pushy. You use these gems each and every day. And we're going to be talking about a few of these. And I hope that, you know, if you're listening and you have some impactful words that you have used in your life and in your career, you might join in and talk about it. Another person says that if you want to be more influential in every situation, you need to master the simple yet powerful lessons contained within. To say could replace just about every other book on human behavior. It's that useful. And another person wrote on the cover, a masterclass in the art of influence, persuasion, and generating top-producing business results. This is a must-read for anyone looking to be more persuasive in their business and personal lives. And so I'm going to start off using one of the tactics. I don't know how to actually put it, but some of the words that you can use to be more impactful and more persuasive, you might say, in influencing people. Now, the first thing that I'm going to talk about this morning based on this particular book is what he calls open-minded. He said, if you were to ask a room of 1,000 people whether they consider themselves open-minded, I'm sure over 900 of them would raise their hands. Just about everybody in the land thinks of themselves as meeting this criterion, and it's pretty easy to understand why. When the alternative is being considered closed-minded, this perception of choice is almost guaranteed to steer others toward your idea. Knowing that people like to see themselves as open-minded, you can easily give yourself a fair advantage within your conversations. When introducing a brand new idea to a stranger, friend, prospect, or team member, using the words, how open-minded are you, and following up that sentence with a scenario you want them to opt into allows you to naturally attract people toward the very thing that you are looking for their support with. This preface shifts you from having 50-50 odds of getting them agreeing with you to odds of 90-10 in your favor. Everybody wants to be open-minded. And so he gives some examples of how you can actually use this. He says, here are a few examples of the words in practice. The first one is, how open-minded would you be about trying this as an alternative? How open-minded would you be about trying this as an alternative? Another one would you be open-minded giving this a chance? You can ask people, you know, if you want to get their opinions, ideas without being pushy, would you be open-minded about giving this a chance? Another one he mentions, how open-minded are you about increasing your monthly income? How open-minded are you about increasing your monthly income? Another one would be, would you be open-minded about seeing if we could work together? Each of these options make it very difficult for the other person to reject your idea, and it at least makes them feel obligated to explore the possibility. it seems like you are giving them a choice, when really you are heavily weighing the only option you are giving them. Put simply, how open-minded are you about at least trying this? And when introducing a new idea, start with, how open-minded are you? This will naturally attract people toward the very thing that you'd like them to support. Everybody wants to be open-minded. So I know I said I was going to try this as I was reading this book, and I was working with a lady with my insurance practice, and we had kind of got stalled. I don't know, we got off track. And I wanted to contact her again and see if she was basically wanted to resume. So these words, you know, they can work face-to-face or they can work text. You know, a lot of people text these days. So I text her. This is what I text her. Hope all is well. Are you still open to getting life insurance for you and your husband? I have several companies that do not require medical exams. And she texts me back, yes, I do still need to do that. Medical exam would be fine if necessary. Can you contact me next week, Thursday, and we can get it resumed? So I was able to resume it without seeming pushy, without seeming rude, without browbeating, you know, and giving her the opportunity to see if she was still open to it. If she would have said no, then I would have just closed the door, so to speak, not really pushed it. But she said yes. And I thought that was a very, I would say, tactful way of putting something so that the person wouldn't feel obligated or they wouldn't feel pressured. And they had they could either say yay or nay. And, you know, either way would have been okay. And you've used some techniques, some communication techniques that you would like to share that maybe our audience would could appreciate and maybe could use. So open-minded, that's one that he mentioned. Another one that he mentioned was just imagine. Let me see if I can get to that. He says, did you know that every decision any human makes is made at least twice? The decision is first made in your mind, hypothetically, before it is ever made in reality. In fact, for a decision to come true, you must have first at least imagined yourself doing it. Have you ever been in a situation in which you have said, or even just mouthed, these words come back to somebody else? I just couldn't see myself doing that. Okay, so sorry for that delay, folks. It is a literal thing. If you cannot see yourself doing something, the chances of you doing it are slim to none. People make decisions based on the images they see in their minds. So if you can place pictures in people's mind, then you can use the results of those images to influence their decisions. So some of the examples he used is just imagine how things will be in 6 months' time. Once you have implemented this, just imagine what your boss would say if you missed this opportunity. Just imagine the look on your kids' faces when they see you achieve this. Just imagine the impact this could have. Creating pictures in the minds of others is done by telling stories. We remember as children many a good story that started with the words, once upon a time, when we hear those words, we knew it was time to kick back, enjoy the moment, and embrace our imaginations while someone used words to paint a world for us to jump into. It would be really tough to engage adults with the same powerful preference. So you need some magic words that create the same picturesque outcome. When you hear the words, just imagine, the subconscious brain kicks a switch and opens the image viewer, and it cannot help but picture the very scenario you are creating. In the previous section, you learned about away motivation and toward motivation. You can apply those same exact rules to how you finish off your just imagine scenarios and help drive people to do things you would like them to do. Again, I would go over some examples of the use of this just imagine. So, for example, if you are trying to have someone implement something, and it's something that's good and very beneficial, if you said to them, just imagine how things will be in 6 months' time once you have implemented this. And so you get people to use their own imagination to really convince themselves that, yeah, this is not a bad idea. I think I'll try this. Or another one he mentions, just imagine what your boss would say if you missed this opportunity. So again, the person that you're talking to would, you know, think and imagine what their boss would say if they missed this particular opportunity. Another one would be just imagine the look on your kids' faces when they see you achieve this. I can just see someone, maybe they're thinking about going to college, or maybe they're thinking about getting some type of certificate or something that would help them to improve their lives. And someone asking them, just imagine the look on your kids' faces when they see you achieve this. And the last one he mentions is just imagine the impact this could have. And so words like this help to make you a more impactful person, because everybody is an influencer, whether they like it or not. A little baby crying is an influencer. That baby crying, you know, you're gonna do something to take care of him or her. So, let me just get back to the kind of let me just get back to the sort of impetus of this. Is that, again, Proverbs 25 and 11 says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. So that's just saying that, you know, the words that we use can be very powerful. Another proverb says, death and life is in the power of the tongue. And it's kind of saying the same things. The words that we use in our lives and the words that we use to convince people, the words that we use to influence people are very powerful. And I noticed that people who are high up in their crafts and their fields, they always have a toolbox of what to use, what words to use, if you notice that. So this particular book, it's just kind of a toolbox for people, whether they're in business or even in their personal life. Okay, so again, if you would like to join this conversation about the importance of words in your communications, and maybe some examples of what you have utilized in your life and your career, by all means, you can press number one on your phone, and we will let you talk about that. All right. Well, let's go to another word. He has 23 different things that he uses. Another one he uses is, how would you feel if? How would you feel if? So with that, he says that a word that gets thrown around like confetti in conferences is motivation. Yet still, when I ask my audiences to share with me what the word means, all I see in response are blank faces. It is the meaning of this word that creates the true base for all areas of negotiation, influence, and persuasion. And you should explore it further if you would like to perform at your peak. Put simply, understanding this word would mean that you could probably get just about anybody to do about anything. The word motivation derives from two very common words forced together. The first part of the word is motive. It is derived from the Latin word motivus, the modern-day translation of which is motive. Another word for motive is reason. The action part of the word derives from action. And if someone is going to take action, they're going to do something or move. This means that a very simple definition of motivation is a reason to move or a reason to do. So now ask yourself this. Would it be fair to say that if the reason were big enough, you could get just about anybody to do just about anything? If you want people to do things that typically they do not want to do, first, you need to find an honest reason that is big enough. Understanding what reasons are big enough means you are to understand how people are motivated. People are motivated by one of two things, either avoiding a loss or acquiring a potential gain. They either want to go toward the light, the good thing that they're looking for, or they want to get away from the thing that could potentially hurt them. The real world tells us that people will work far harder to avoid potential loss than they will to achieve potential gain. Greater than that is the fact that the more contrast you can create between where somebody does not want to be and where they hope to be, the more likely you are to get people to move. Understanding the truth of motivation coupled with this next point gives you real context for this set of magic words. The second thing you must consider is whether people are base their decisions on emotion or logic. The true answer is that, in fact, both. It is just that the decision is always made for emotive reasons first. The real world tells us that people will work far harder to avoid potential loss than they will to achieve a potential gain. So some of the examples that he uses for this, how would you feel there? The first one is, how would you feel if this decision led to your promotion? How would you feel if this decision led to your promotion? Number one, but I guess not. I don't see it anymore. How would you feel if this decision led to your promotion? So that just put yourself in that position, you know, whether you're in business or whether you have kids or, you know, spouse or whatever, how would you feel if this decision led to your promotion? And it gets people to imagine. Another one, he says, was how would you feel if your competition passed you? How would you feel if your competition passed you? And how would you feel if you turned this around? How would you feel if you turned this around? Or how would you feel if you lost everything? So this is another example of what you can use and what a lot of people use. Probably not a lot of people, but some people that are high up in their professions, they have this kind of thing in their little bag. But I see I have someone in the 77 area code who wants to have a question or comment. 77 area code, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, good afternoon, Jansen and the crew. This is Malcolm Hughes again, calling from outside of Atlanta. Dan, I wanted to take exception to your statement about people do more to avoid punishment than they do for rewards. And what I found, in my early career as a supervisor per se, I would probably criticize people first without even complimenting them. But through maturing or whatever, what I found it worked best if I'm trying to give constructive criticism is to give a compliment first, start out the conversation off with a compliment, make them feel good about themselves, and then tell them how to improve. And that just seems to be in conflict with what the author is saying there.
Right, right. Well, if it works, I mean, that's, like they say, there's more than one way to cast.
Right. Okay. Absolutely.
But it's interesting, Malcolm. Now you're into business and real estate. I would be interested in asking you a question. Is that I know that over the years you've had to negotiate and save money here, earn money there, you know, in your business. Can you think of any tips and tricks? I don't know what word to use, but persuasive words that you have used in the past. And I don't mean to put you on the spot. If you can, it's okay if you don't want to talk about it.
No, I can think of one thing. The first thing that comes to mind in the real estate business is, I don't think I've ever used it, but I've heard it is very effective. It's cash for keys. When someone won't move out of your house, or you're having a difficult time with someone not paying rent, you can offer them, $100 or $500 or $1,000 if they move out and leave the place clean, by the end of the week or something like that. So that's and it's a play on words. It's not necessarily it's not trying to motivate them or whatever, but it's trying to get them to influence them to get them to do something. Me personally, what I use when I got a deadbeat tenant and trying to get rid of them, I tell them to marshal. Sometimes, not all the time, because this doesn't always work. Like there's different ways in a cat. But I'll tell them, hey, the marshal coming on Tuesday, they're going to put your stuff on the street. If you don't want it on the street, I suggest you go ahead and move it out because, the moving crew will come in with the marshal, and sometimes that motivates them to move, and sometimes it doesn't, And sometimes you don't want to warn them because of various reasons. And one reason I can think of, I was telling that to somebody one time, and every time I get ready for the marshals to come, it seems like something would happen that the marshal would postpone the service. And I found out, you know, I called the tenant, said the marshal coming. It's like they calling their cousin down at the marshal office, and they just backdoor stuff on me. They postponed the move, the eviction. So, you know,
right,
be
right,
careful.
Right, right. Well, that's interesting. I like to talk about, you know, another. I don't know if I want to call these tactics. Magic words, but it's ways that people can influence others, you know, without being pushy, without being rude, and without making the other person feel bad. Another thing that Phil Jones talks about, he says the words "most people." These two words, which contain just 10 letters, are possibly responsible for more of my negotiating success than any other single strategy I have employed in my business. Indecision is the biggest thing that stands in the way of progress, and these words can help jump people out of procrastination in a flash. There are a few things that are worth understanding about people, and these are two big ones. First, people take great confidence from the fact that people like them have made a decision before them, and that decision worked out just fine. Consider this scenario. Maybe one you have experienced yourself. Occasionally, you see a group of children on top of a rock face looking to jump into the water below. But nobody wants to go first. However, as soon as one person is brave enough to go first and jumps into the water, lands with a splash and doesn't suffer any injury, but instead breaks the surface with a great big smile on their face, now everybody seems to think it is a good idea. Human beings, people, you and I, we all like to follow others and trust that there is safety in numbers. So people need to be told what to do, but without their permission, it can sound rude. I am sure there have been plenty of times that you have wanted to say, what I think you should do is. These two factors create the power in the application of the magic words, most people. Now, when you are faced with a moment when what you want to say is, look, what I think you should do is this, but you cannot say that because it is kind of obnoxious. Instead, you can simply say, most people would, in this situation, people would in this situation, and watch how it changes everything. When you tell people what most people would do, their subconscious brain says, aha, I'm most people. So if that is what most people would do, then perhaps that is what I should do too. So when you tell people what most people would do, their brain says, I'm most people. So perhaps that is what I should do too. Did someone want to say something?
Yeah, I had a comment, Jensen.
Go ahead.
Maybe I'm hanging around with the wrong people. I said maybe I'm hanging around with the wrong people because what I find is, you know, I try to find successful people and follow the path that they have chosen and what are the ideas, you know, of successful people. But I find myself around other people and pointing out success and using successful people as examples, and I find out that they just won't do it. They just so intent on doing things their own way and learning the same lesson. And this goes for people from 15 to 70 years old. You know, they seem to be kind of stuck in their ways and want to do everything themselves rather than say, hey, so-and-so was successful. Then maybe I should imitate him, and maybe I can achieve a certain level of success that Bill Gates has done or Jeff Bezos or someone local in your community, you know?
Right.
I'm finding just, I'm not finding it working very well with the crowd that I'm hanging around with.
Well, you know, the thing is, people are kind of set in their ways, and old habits are sometimes hard to break, you know. I was talking to a lady the other day who way overweight, I mean, seriously overweight. And I was telling her some things, and it was just, you know, it was just hard because she's developed patterns over the years that what I was telling her just didn't make sense to her. It was just unbelievable, you know.
Okay.
I was telling her, look, I lost weight. This is how I did it, you know. It was like, oh, I couldn't do that, you know. So I know what you mean, Malcolm. It can be hard, but let me just read some of the examples that Phil Jones uses, trying to persuade people. He says, "What most people do is complete the forms with me here today. You then receive your welcome pack, and we get you booked in for a lunch." So this sounds like someone who is booking maybe at a meeting or a hotel or something. People do is complete the forms with me here today. You then receive your welcome pack, and we get you booked in for a lunch. So he's using the most people to just let the person know that this is what most people do, and this is easy, and so on. Another example is, what most people do is place a small order to get started. Commit to a few of the best products, see how they work out in their daily routines, and then decide what they want to do next. Another one would be, what most people in your circumstances would grab this opportunity with both hands, knowing that there is almost no risk. He says, try to argue with each of these points and see how they can be used to strengthen your point of view. In fact, most people put the words "most people" into some of their daily conversations, and most of those people see an immediate positive effect on their influence. Most people put the words, in quotes, "most people" into their daily conversations, and most of those people see an immediate positive impact. Of the 23 things, I think we just talked about two. And let's see. Another one that he mentions, and I'm just randomly I wouldn't say it's a chapter. I wouldn't call these chapters. It's just a two or three page or two or three paragraph of information. Let's see. Number 11, it goes, "I bet you're a bit like me. I bet you're a bit like me." This set of words is possibly one of my favorites because it can help just about anybody agree to just about anything. It is even more powerful in a conversation with a stranger than it is with somebody you already know. Oh, yeah, let me just say that on this particular book, guys, by Phil Jones, I first found out about it on YouTube. They have the full audio of this book on YouTube. It's called Exactly What to Say, The Magic Words for Influence and Impact. It's a very short book, easy to read, easy to understand. Well, okay, getting back to number 11, I bet you're a bit like me. When you are talking to a stranger, the conversation needs to move easily, which means it typically follows the path of least resistance. If you use this preference ahead of a scenario, you would like people to believe to be true Expect them to agree with you wholeheartedly, quickly and easily. Prefacing a statement with the magic words, "I bet you're a bit like me," quite often results in the other comfortably agreeing with you, with what you're saying, providing that you are reasonable, of course. This serves as a wonderful tool to help gather evidence to use in building your later recommendations. My experience has taught me that many customers, prospects, and people in general are not always completely honest. Getting them to provide evidence that supports your objective makes it harder for them to disagree with you. You can use this set of words to help avoid many common objections by gaining full agreement with something they may otherwise have tried to use as a future excuse. Okay, now, let's see. Here are some examples of "I bet you're a bit like me." Imagine you are fearful of someone objecting to your idea because they don't have the time to commit to it. Early in the conversation, you could say something like, "I bet you're a bit like me. You enjoy working hard now, knowing that it will pay dividends in the future." I'll repeat that. "I bet you're a bit like me. You enjoy working hard now, knowing that it will pay dividends in the future." Or you could say, "I bet you're a bit like me. You hate watching trashy TV in the evening and would rather work on something beneficial." "I bet you're a bit like me. You're a busy person who's always juggling to get everything done." Slip those kinds of statements into early conversations while holding eye contact with the other person and just watch them nod back at you. What they do, this means they know that you know they agree with those concepts. This makes it an awful lot harder for them to tell you they have not got the time to do what you demonstrated to give them the things they said they want. So, you know, if anyone is would like to chime in about maybe some of the words, phrases that you've used in the past that has helped persuade people or convince people to basically maybe do the right thing or maybe get them back on track, feel free to press number one on your phone, and you can we can talk about that. So we've got time for a couple more. One of them I'm going to say is that he uses number 13 is "don't worry, don't worry." So he says, "What I love best about this next set of simple words is the power they have on people who are nervous, apprehensive, or showing signs of concern. You know when you can see and feel the anxiety in somebody, when they are uncertain about what to do next, or perhaps even fearful. These two magic words provide instant relief, and you can typically see the change in the recipient. Say the words, 'don't worry.' Tension just pours out of them as they become more relaxed. Just two words, when said confidently and calmly, create an outcome that is the equivalent of the expression, 'phew.' That little sign that comes out as they start to feel in control. This is particularly useful in high-stress scenarios when confronted with someone who is panicked or just to comfortably put someone at ease. The minute somebody is indecisive, hold your posture. Stay relaxed and give them the feeling that you have this under control and can help them navigate the next step." Some examples of "don't worry" is, "don't worry, you're bound to be nervous right now. Somebody that is nervous about something, maybe they're just about to get married, or maybe they're just about to go to college, or maybe they're about to do something that they've never done before and they're apprehensive, you can just let them know that, you know, it's okay to be nervous right now, because don't worry about it. It's normal. Another on the don't worry is don't worry. I know you don't know what to do right now, but that's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you through this process and overcome all the hurdles as they crop up along the way. So this is something that could reassure somebody. Just tell them, don't worry. Another one would be an example that Jones used here is, don't worry. I feel just the way you feel right now. Don't worry. I felt just the way you feel right now before I started. And look at me now. So don't worry if you're wondering how you're going to make all these new word choices stick. They will come in time, and you will soon master it after getting a little better from one conversation to the next. So today's episode of the show, it's just having us to realize that, you know, there's ways that you can say things that will be more effective. I mean, how many times have you been in a conversation and then, you know, it didn't work out exactly the way you wanted it to, and then a couple of days later you say to yourself, gee, I wish I would have said this, or I wish I would have said it that way. Particular book is just a toolbox, and everybody has their own toolboxes, I'm sure, whether it's conscious or subconscious. But it just, when you have, you know, ready-made, you might say, things to say, it could just help you navigate and better in conversation, because you have ways of talking to people that makes sense to them, and it doesn't make you sound pushy, abrasive. It doesn't make you sound like you're a know-it-all. So the show today is really to cause people that are listening to think about ways of saying things that would be easier and more helpful in conversations. I'm going to do one more before we close today, and hopefully this has stirred some imagination in your part that there are ways that you can speak that can help you be more persuasive and help you more as an influencer. So the last one today is the good news. The good news. Okay. He says, now is the time for us to talk about how you can turn around all that negative energy, the negative energy that comes from others in your team, others who you are prospecting, or perhaps just other people in your life. These words provide you with a tool to spin a negative into a positive using a technique called labeling. The moment you apply a label to something, it becomes almost impossible for the other person in the conversation to shed that label. It is the acceptance of this new label that creates the ability to change the direction of a conversation with minimal effort and move it toward a more positive outcome. Using the magic word, the good news is, as a preference to your chosen point, ensures that the recipient has to accept the label you have attached to it. This optimistic spin can help you face negativity in your life, prevent you from ending up in a self-sabotaging conversation of blame and pity, and helps you start to build a new direction. So, let's see. If somebody is questioning their ability to do something, then you can respond with, look, the good news is that we have dozens of people who are in exactly the same situation when they first started, and they have gone on to be successful, and they are here to support you too. If they are unsure whether they have got the skills that are required in order to make the business work, you could say, the good news is that we have comprehensive training you can complete at your own pace to give you all the skills you need to make a success of this business. What about when somebody is resisting change but says they want more success? You could respond with, the good news is you already know that what you are doing now is not working. So what is the harm in trying this? Prefacing things with the good news is you cause people to face forward with optimism and zap any negative energy out of the conversation. So that's another words and phrases that you can use. The good news is, and I like that too, because you know, you kind of frame it in an optimistic way. I like when he says somebody's considering training. The good news is we have comprehensive training you can complete at your own pace to give you all the skills you need to make a success. Now, if you notice, everything here is something that you can use in your personal life while you're talking to your kids, grandkids. There are ways of framing things that can be more persuasive without making you sound like again, pushy, a know-it-all, old fogey. use it at the store. So I guess you can just start to build your own toolbox of words and phrases that you can use that can help you be more persuasive. And so we've got about another 5 minutes. If anyone has a question or comment or like to chime in, press number one on your phone. And we got a few minutes to go. So I hope that everybody has benefited from this. Like I say, I had a speaker today, but they had I had a guest today, but they had a speaking engagement at the last minute. And I'm going to have her on hopefully next week or the week after, a lady that works in the community to help cut down on gang violence and even to help feeding people, homeless people. So she would have been very, very good guest, but had a speaking engagement today. And I thought this book, Exactly What to Say, The Magic Words for Influence and Impact, might be interesting for people to know about, because all highly successful people, I believe, have a toolbox. I mean, they don't just go into situations willy-nilly. I mean, the experience tells them that there are easier, more persuasive ways to think of things to say. So in your personal life, professional life, think about words, phrases that you can use so that you are more persuasive. And remember that we're all influencers. We have to influence our spouse, our kids. We're chairman of clubs and so forth. It's always good to have a toolbox of what to say in various scenarios. So with that, I'm going to close the show out today. I want to thank everybody for listening. If anyone would like to get in touch with me, my email is jansenbrooks@yahoo.com. That's jansenbrooks@yahoo.com. Maybe you'd like to be on the show, or maybe you have a question or comment for me offline. The number to call on Saturdays, 10 o'clock Pacific time, is 516-387-1611, if you'd like to listen to the show. With that, everybody, I'm going to wrap it up for this week. I hope that you continue to call in and call in next week. I hope to have a guest. But with that, I hope everybody has a great weekend. And Mother's Day, for all you mothers out there, happy Mother's Day. I'll just say happy Mother's Day, and I hope you have a great weekend. All right, everybody, thanks for calling in today. And Lord willing, we'll talk again next week, same time.